Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show,
where we talk about things that matter,
practice the art of coming more alive,
and reflect on just how strange and wonderful life can be.
We're glad you're here. Should have tested this earlier.
This is what happens on the Kate and Colby Show.
Hi, good evening. Give us
a
second.
It's real fun. It's
Kate,
lots of fun.
Can I gradually place you under the bus?
Sure.
No?
Really slowly and gently?
Yeah, real slowly. I was just going to say, Kate can't hear in the moment, and then part of that is because she didn't want to wear her ears during the countdown, her headphones, because she doesn't like when I sing, is fine.
Can I quickly throw you under the bus?
Yes,
it's
I will.
Because you're loud.
It's because I'm loud. But we do got to figure out why you can't hear now.
Yeah,
so, why don't you try unplugging and replugging your headphones into the extender. Again, welcome to the Kate and Colby Show. We'll be with
everybody.
You in just a second.
There's always something.
We got to make sure Kate can hear all the things. Can you hear? Do you hear the?
Yes.
You should be able to hear the music. And
I don't hear music.
You don't hear music.
I don't hear music.
If you can't hear music, then you won't be able to hear our guest. So we got to fix that.
Which means
that.
Then we can't have a conversation, and that's the whole show. Oh,
how about that?
Hey, yeah.
Is it on now?
Yeah. Perfect.
Good evening.
Oh, and our friends are here. Wait, is this from this week, or is there an old
this
one?
This is tonight. This is tonight. Here, what's up, Victor
our
Diaz?
Our friends are all here.
Hello,
that's
Victor
so
Diaz.
Fun. Hi,
hello,
everybody.
Susan.
Anaya, Susan, Paul, Victor, Shane,
Goddess
James.
Life just keeps happening.
Hi, everybody.
I don't know what that means, but I like it. Get a shirt. Goddess Life.
I'd wear that shirt.
Hey, welcome.
And then
to
our
the
friend Kelsey is texting us and saying, the pre-show is live.
So here we are tonight on the Kate and Colby Show, episode 23, 23. And we've got a special guest on
is
the show
really
tonight.
Episode 23?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It'd be funny if I just made up a number. But I don't.
You would do that.
Inconsistent. Anyways, our almost guaranteed to be new friend, Shelby Forsythia. Yeah.
I had to follow the train of how you. I know, but almost guaranteed to be new with the emphasis on new. I'm like, no, she is new.
And it's going to be fun. And you're here. And we're here. Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show.
I love it when we're just sitting here, total goobers, can't figure out technology, and all our friends show up, and they're just here. And
all right. They come for the train wreck.
You nuggets are so cute.
And they
cute.
Stay for the holistic soul care. Real quick, do you ever find that, this is a little off topic, do you ever find that one of your armpits stinks more than the other?
No.
I didn't think I did either.
My armpits
tonight.
Just stink, period.
Well, that's true. You say that about yourself. But I was like getting ready for the show, and I'm like, man, my right is real stank. My left is like just norm. I could still
smell
the
deodorant. I'm sitting by your right.
Well, I reapplied. Wait, right? Yes, you are. That's my. That's correct.
You know me pointing the wrong direction.
Even in real life.
Yes, correct.
Hey, how are you in this moment? Check in.
Keep reading the comments. How am I? I'm good. I'm frazzled beyond the normal Wednesday night. Holy crap, we have a show to do. Really quick, figure out why I can't hear things.
Is that because
feed the kids
all of the week and the backing to school?
Yeah, it's just tomorrow morning our kids go back to school and I can't figure out if I've done everything that I'm supposed to do to make that happen. Are they all registered? I don't know. I think they are.
Yeah.
I think they're at least all registered for school.
Yeah.
Beyond that, who knows?
One's in school now.
One's been going to school for a couple
weeks
now.
We just did back-to-back orientations yesterday and today.
Yeah.
So. Wow, you've been crushing it with all this.
And then the third one starts online school.
Yeah.
Which is complicated and new. Different online school from the COVID. This is purposefully online school. Anyway, I'm good. You know how you and I are coping? We should tell the people how we're coping.
Oh, okay.
A friend texted me today and said, how's your back-to-school mama heart? And I said, well, I've lost my damn mind. I've torn my entire house apart. I've even given my husband permission to buy a new TV, and we're painting the entire house. Wall to wall. I don't know.
I like coping.
This is how we cope. Colby and I's particular retail therapy is home updates. That's how we
changing a room. The color, the decor.
It's not a week in the Martin house if we're not rearranging some room or moving a piece of furniture at the very least.
We say that it just takes us different iterations of arranging a room and styling a room to like really figure out what the room wants to be. We say that, and I think that part of it's true. Like, we do really need to like do it a couple times. I think part of it is we just like the continual change and
that's
redoing
really
it.
All it is for me. I like change a lot. It helps me. Change in our world that we can control helps me cope with stuff I can't control.
Like
Ben responded
prayer.
To your stink and said, mine stink evenly. Apparently, I have more deconstruction to do.
That is correct, Ben. Yes.
Yes,
you
that's
are
what
still.
That means.
Only evangelical armpits stink can in alignment with each other.
Oh, my God.
Hartman 23, not only is it a 4K TV, it is an LG OLED. OLED is the best of the LEDs.
All I know is that I get to paint my walls blue and hang a bunch of black and white.
Hang a bunch of black and white. And not only, okay, so not only, I haven't got the TV yet, we get it tomorrow, but then today, another dream was fulfilled, another bucket list item. I have always been, and I told my afternoon show this, I've always been an appreciator of fine.
Of words like appreciator.
Appreciator of fine viewing and listening experiences when it comes to movies and televisions, a.k.a. I like my nice TVs and I like my surround sound. And I have always gotten by with versions of, like, home theater in a box and then upgrade.
This man, I swear to God. It's like, you guys have been surviving off of my surround sound.
All I want to say is that today I finally upgraded from like bookshelf speakers.
Enneagram threes, man. What
bookshelf speakers
do?
To actual legit floor standing speakers that are now my left and right channels. And they're glorious. I haven't even
they're
listened to them yet.
Feet
they're
tall.
Just not yet. But they're I'm really excited. The whole room's gonna be super fun.
Whatever.
We got a couple days. Maybe we'll probably knock
we
it out.
We host a lot of viewing things, and so we're just excited to make it a party room more so than it already is.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all.
Victor, it's 65-inch. 65. LG OLED Model CX.
I like how people are still talking about their stench.
That's a hot
like, that
top.
Has kept
it's
going
top,
since
yo.
You made the comment. It makes me happy.
Yeah.
I like our people. Oh, you know what I forgot to do?
Yeah.
If I unplug it, does it make a weird sound for our
No. No,
because
no,
I forgot
no.
to let
Are you gonna
the,
go somewhere?
I forgot to let the dog
Who
in.
Who didn't let the dog in? You.
Who let
you,
the dog
you,
in?
You. All right, while she does that, I'll play some bass guitar and check in with our viewers. In the spirit of back to schooling, why don't you check in with us, which is to say type on your with your little digis or your little thummies on Facebook and or YouTube. As a kid, what was one of your favorite or at least most memorable parts of back to school? So the whole thing, it could be the clothes, it could be the school supplies, it could be picking your classes if we're talking more like in the high school range, it could be seeing your friends again if you hadn't, you know, hang out with them all summer. What was one of the most favorite and or memorable parts of back to school for you?
I hated going back to school with everything in my soul.
You did?
Mm-hmm. So it's hard to think of a favorite.
That's why I did the parenthetical statement
for
people like
or
you.
Or at least most memorable. The terror. No. I think having new things of some sort. We didn't do a lot of buying new things because we didn't have the means, but there was at least something. A lunchbox. There was at least one new item. Or pencils. Those are always great. Smell of new pencils. That's memorable.
That's really fun. That's part of back to school. The pencils.
Smell of new pencils, don't you think?
Oh, that's a number two.
Oh, okay, I like Kelsey's. Two. I always loved that. Okay, that it? Is what I
walking
will say.
Walking to middle school to see what
remember
teacher.
Remember, you would see it yes! posted on the wall.
With the
we
classmates?
Don't do that anymore. Yeah, and you'd
okay.
see who was in your
Soup's
class.
Soup's memorable on that one. Mm-hmm. I do remember that too.
Thanks for reminding me of that,
yeah.
Kelsey.
Yeah, walking to, for me, it was Oak School, Oak Elementary.
Off subject for a second, my dog friends out there who always want a bell update. We now, the reason why I said I hadn't let her in yet, what I meant was into the studio, because ever since I did that one time, now she thinks, oh, they're in the studio. I have
podcast
to be with them.
Night.
So she comes to the door and does this until I let her in. So I just know you wanted your bell update.
We've had a lot of bell experiences on our podcast, haven't we?
Hmm?
We've had a lot of bell.
Yeah, she's part of the pod
bell fam. Bell interruptions.
Part of the View crew, the pod fam.
That's true. What up, pod fam?
School supply shopping. Clothes. Yeah,
school supply. Not clothes.
I can, like, smell it all, the paper, the pencils.
I love back-to-school clothes. It was the only time I remember growing up getting new clothes.
It was back-to-school.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Speaking of smell, you just activated my olfactory memory. What smelling? So this would have been, like, early elementary school when those like real thick clunky cotton t-shirts, but they had the graphic what is happening?
I'm trying to point to Kelsey's comment and I can't do it.
Good luck with that. But like the big graphic tees were like the image was like this waxy thick coating and it had this smell, like it was really stiff and it wasn't real comfortable, but it had this smell like that
was all graphic tees were graphic, back in the day. They didn't
were.
Know how to make them like part of the t-shirt.
That's right.
It was like you had a sticker stuck
uh-huh.
to your shirt,
and it
a
had
really
this,
big
I can,
sticker.
I can smell that yeah. that graphic tee.
Why
right
didn't
now.
We know how to make graphic tees back in the day? I'm glad we figured that out.
Yeah.
Now they're soft and lovely.
Good job, technology.
Ooh, planning for the gym class. Oh, as an assistant coach, nice. Gym class
where
all of
see
my
that?
Worst nightmares.
Oh, shopping for supplies and planning for the gym class as an assistant coach. That'd be fun. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Concert choir. I love it.
Oh, Shane, I love this. Shane's like, I'm not so sure because I was homeschooled. But I did like getting back to going on field trips. Lots of fun museums and the like around here. I bet there are good museums in New York.
Maybe.
I've heard.
Maybe.
One or two.
Possibly.
At least two. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wonder what our kids will say their favorite part of going back to school is.
The orientation where everybody wore a mask and nobody could hear anything. It was a shit show of an orientation today.
Sorry. Colby doesn't talk like that, so when he does, it makes me laugh really hard. It's true. It was. It was rough, people.
Nightmare.
That's right. We'll be okay. School will be fine. Kids will be fine. We'll all be fine. I don't know.
We'll
let's talk to our guest about grief.
Should we? All right. Let's transition out of this and do one more thing. Before we get to our guest tonight, if you would like to support the Kate and Colby Show with your love and energy, follow us on Instagram, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, subscribe on YouTube, follow on, do all those things. Those are like... those are the low bar. Like, I want to show my support. No? You don't
I
like
disagree.
Where this is going?
Nope.
If you want
no
to support
bar.
The Kate and Colby
no
Show,
bars.
I can edit that out for the podcast later, right? I'm just kidding. It all stays. Anyway, building up to, if you haven't yet heard or you haven't been with us in a while, the Kate and Colby Show now invites you to partner with us financially by going to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby. That's all one word, Kate and Colby. And what you can do, what does it mean to buy a coffee? Well, each coffee is basically $5. And you can buy one coffee. Hey, have a coffee. You can buy five coffees like Tommy did today. Can I tell you about Tommy today?
Sure.
You want to know what happened to Tommy today? All right.
Yes.
So I had this Wednesday afternoon show called The Altar, and I was doing The Altar today, and someone showed up in the comment section from YouTube, and I didn't recognize their name or profile, so I don't think they've been around before, and they asked the question, do you accept money? I think she said, it's like, do people give you money, is what I think what she said. And I saw that, and I said, no, not for this. Like, my newsletter and my live show that – I don't take any money for that. That's just put it out in the world. It's fine. It's there. And I said, but however, my wife and I do a podcast because I thought she was asking like, can I support you in some way? Like, can I give? That was the way it was worded. Like, do you accept money? And so I'm like, Not really, but also, and then I threw up this link, and I'm like, if people
wait,
want
it. What happened from there? I'm so.
So what happened from there is then she, another comment later, I'm trying to remember, she wrote abortion, Planned Parenthood, and organ, like organ transplant. And then like the next comment was, you always dodge the questions of substance. And like, I'm trying to run the show and I'm reading this and I'm like, who is this person?
Wait, how is that connected to money?
I think her belief is that I do take people's money and yet I don't address hard topics.
Oh,
I think she might have been trolling a little bit. And I was answering in earnest. I wonder, Susan, you were on the show. Like, how did you receive her comments? Or actually, she was on YouTube, so Susan, you wouldn't have seen her comments.
Well, good. No one needs to see
that. It was really, at first I thought it was like a genuine, like, interest. Like how.
Okay, anyways, how does this all lead to Tommy?
Because Tommy.
Tell me something good here, friend.
Well, because Tommy hangs out with me on Wednesday afternoons.
Cool.
And so after the show, I went and I saw that Tommy went and bought us 5 coffees today for that. So even though I don't ever ask for money on
That's
the altar,
so
and I thought I did it for this other person who turns out was not asking that, Tommy's like, hey, but I would like
Do
to
you
buy
take
you
money
some coffee.
For abortion? What in the world?
It was really weird.
Why?
So anyway, thank you, Tommy, for buying us some coffees today and
all
helping
right.
pay to run this show is what you just did. So thank you for that. This is fun. Now, to our guest.
Best part of the night.
Let's get to it. It's Shelby
Yay!
Forsythia. And am I pronouncing that last name correctly? Is it Forsythia?
Yes, you're right. Okay, it's just like the flower.
All right. Oh, it's a flower? Did you know that was a flower? Of course you knew it was a flower. I should not have asked that. One of the worst.
Okay,
off to a good start.
No
Shelby Forsythia.
No one
named
expects
after a
you to know names of flowers, baby. You're good.
Hi, Shelby. Welcome
to the garage.
That's us.
I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, and you told me during the pre-show that you are – actually, can I give away your location? I should have asked that.
Sure.
Is it okay for
right
people
ahead.
To know? Okay, so Shelby lives at 1437.
Stop it.
Shelby's in Chicago. So she mentioned that we might occasionally hear the L train doing its thing, which I think
love
is a ton
it.
Of fun.
That's great.
But
goes
so
right
thanks
overhead.
For thanks for staying up late.
What's a Chicago summer like?
Let's talk about climate change.
Right.
it used to be. Mm-hmm. It used to be about a month where everything was unbearably hot. And so you did a lot of rooftop/outdoor/beachy things. And now it's just unrelenting humidity. So my very dear friend is training me to run a 25K. And we did a time trial this morning, which means run a mile as fast as you can. So there's a haunting memory from school and gym class. run a mile as fast as you can. And I got to tell you, I have sweat more back to armpits than I ever have in my entire life. So here, why don't you just bring all these topics very close together first thing in the morning
today. We did it.
Great work.
We did
that
it.
That was amazing.
We are.
Bringing
we are,
it all together. Making
we've
it
already peaked here.
I love it.
Thanks for, okay, so I'd love to quickly just share the story of how you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a bit about how it is you even came to us, like, because you didn't know Kate, you didn't know Colby, now all of a sudden the three of us know each other. Give us the brief synopsis of how that came to be.
Yes, so I published my first book in 2019 and my second one in the fall of last year called Your Grief, Your Way. And every time I publish a book, I always ask my podcast listeners and my followers and my humans on Instagram, where do you want to see me that I might not know about? And a very lovely client of mine named Linda from Germany, so shout out to Linda from Germany, suggested your show. And I reached out and got lost in the shuffle of inboxes, as emails do.
I didn't
and,
know you were going to tell that part of the story.
This, interview for end of August. But it was perfect. Everything worked out perfectly, and I feel like the stars align. And I didn't know that this was your 23rd episode, and that just happens to be my favorite number. So everything is just falling into place.
And our anniversary. How great is that?
It's true. Michael Jordan's number,
Yay!
Land of Chicago, all of that.
That's amazing.
Linda from Germany.
We forgot we had an inbox is what happened there
yeah,
with that. Yep.
yeah. So thank you, Linda from Germany. How cool is that, babe? Like, what a small, glorious world
of
people who are looking out for one another. And you mentioned in our pre-show that you don't, and we're gonna get into your story here in a minute. So I hope not to dig into it too far. But you said, like, you don't really approach your work from, and we'll talk about your work in a second, from a religious angle, and yet you've been noticing that the people that you do this work with seem to be side-dooring you into these some of these different, like, more
spiritual spaces.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's
fascinating. I think
that's really cool. Yeah.
Yes. Some of the most popular work that I do is surrounded by spirituality, or inadvertently has spirituality injected into it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I sell merch related to the work that I do. And the most popular seller is the t-shirt. We'll go to printed t-shirts again.
they smell better, says, hopefully, now.
They smell better, yeah. It just says, grief is holy. And it has resonated with so many people, because people are like, what does that mean? I got an email last week from a guy who said, grief is holy. What does that mean? I don't comprehend, like, what that means, or what does that mean to you, or is it an agenda, or blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, what I'm learning or what I'm experiencing for myself and what clients and podcast listeners have relayed to me is that grief is more than what happens on earth, if that makes sense. It happens beyond and infinite. It's a lot more than that. It's ancestral, it's lifetime, it's spiritual. It goes back really far, and it also goes into the future really far. It's something that companions us, like God or the energy of the universe does.
Those are all of my favorite words that have been strung together ever.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, can we just be done?
I swear I didn't prep for the show at all. I literally just popped on and was going to see what the hell happened.
I just wanted to crawl in a ball and cry. That was so perfectly stated.
Also, Enneagram 4, which I just learned in the last year, so nice. I am well in my space.
For mm-hmm. Yes, you mm-hmm. are. That's amazing. Okay, so you're saying you don't come at your grief work from a religious lens, or bringing religion into it, and then what you just said was so spiritual. So can you talk to me about that? What's your experience with spirituality? Have you had a journey? Have you been in some religion and then not? Or what's your story there?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to this, so I'm going to see how tightly I can compress it so we can also talk about other things tonight. I was raised in a non-denominational Christian household, which was pretty, like, lax as far as traditions and things of that nature go. But I also came out of the closet in college as a queer woman, and was rejected by my family and a couple of other friend groups and things for that reason. And so there started to be this abrasive kind of relationship with the church of, like, is this really a place to belong? Is this a safe haven? Is this a home? And the reason I got into doing grief work is that my mother died suddenly when I was in college. I was 21 years old. And in that, like, in the same moment that she took her last breath, it was like my relationship with the God that rewards and punishes died. And so my tethering to any sort of, I am a Christian and I believe in Christianity and this is the God that I serve and whatever other hand gestures go with that, it was like all of that rubble, dust, just a hollowed out shell of a building. And what's fascinating is that I don't approach grief from a religious perspective. Like, I don't come at it with any intent of, I am approaching grief from a Christian perspective or Christian informed or things like that. But what's funny is that because grief is so deep and wide, it has no other choice but to suck spirituality into it. And so when I work with clients, or when I host workshops, or even when I do interviews and things like this with you all,
suck spirituality into
questions
it.
About uh-huh. yes, questions about death and the nature of life inevitably prompt questions about God and the universe and what does it all mean and why am I here and what about the people who've been here before, and is God with us when we grieve, or does God abandon us when we grieve? And these really I liken it to biblically, like fish shaking at the heavens. Like, that is a holy act. And, like, grief is a holy experience for that reason. And so it's like I have divorced myself from God as an oppressive figure and realigned myself with God as a welcoming and inclusive figure within the nature and context of grief. And so I've separated myself from Christianity in big quotations with the capital C, and also still believe in a larger thing that holds up and is present for everything that exists.
Yep.
Thanks for sharing that.
You are in Thank space you. With your people.
Yeah.
It's resonating with everyone, I promise.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm thrilled to see chats and questions and all the things later, because this is,
Yeah, we sign off on that theological maneuver.
Yeah, and the story and the experience is just so resonant with our folks, from being queer and having family reject and not being part of the Big C church, but being sucked into spirituality anyway, and all of it is just so resonant. Can we go back to that line you said about when your mother died, the God that you knew died? Like, why? Why did that happen?
Yeah. And this is such an experience. It's something I noticed in myself first, and then every now and then when I work with clients, I see the storyline coming up again and again. And it's ultimately the question of, why do bad things happen to good people?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the type of Christianity I was raised in, whether or not it explicitly said this, was a religion that said, if you're good enough, good things will happen.
Yep.
And if you're bad enough, bad things will happen.
Yep.
And I couldn't understand, like, that being true and my mother dying being true, I couldn't make both of those fit in my brain.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't make them make sense together, and one of them had to go. And the one that I knew for sure was that my mother was dead. And so God had to get he was shown the door. He was kind of booted out by a big steel-toed boot. But yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, one of these truths is no longer true. And circling back to Enneagram 4, something that is so important to me more than anything else is, tell the truth, be as authentic as you possibly can be. What rings with the most accuracy in your life right now? And so to sit in the truth of, my mother's dead, as opposed to still clinging to, well, she must have been bad, or it must have been karma, or she's being punished for something, or I'm being punished for something. Like, I couldn't believe any of that to be true. And so that truth had to die. That way of thinking also had to die along with her. And this is something I hear from so many grieving people, whether they're grieving an actual death or a divorce or a diagnosis that changes their life, or COVID-19, which is like the huge grief that we've all been living underneath for the past year and a half or so. It's like, it's not, why do bad things happen to good people? It's like, even that as a question had to leave the room.
Yes. Yes. I love that. I so understood every word you just said, and it's fascinating because your sweet Enneagram 4 brain, you lost your mom and you thought of the basically punitive God that we were given. So the good and the bad matching that you talked about. My mother died when I was 18, and I, even though I was given that same story about the bad things happen to bad people and good things happen to good people, my brain went the other way of, this story must fit into a positive framework. Like, she's dead, it must be for a good reason. There must be a good God who made good things happen out of this. Oh,
that's exactly what Ben just said.
Yeah.
Bad things do happen
to
good people. There's a churchy way to spin that,
I knew you would.
Too.
That's why I wanted to bring it up, because I'm like, I bet she knows the flip side of this and has stuff to say about that, too. Yeah.
This is another thing that we're plagued with. So it's really funny that grief so many times is turned into a dichotomous experience. It's either bad things happen to bad people, good things happen to good people, or it's like the total opposite end, where it's like good vibes only, spiritual bypassing. What lemonade can I make from these lemons immediately and right now? Mm-hmm. Part of this, as Suzanne Stabile writes about living in an Enneagram 3 culture, is that we are wired to see the triumph or the success in everything. And from my perspective, I use this phrase a lot in my work, is we are obsessed with triumph porn. How can we make this a happy ending in 90 minutes?
I feel personally attacked.
How can we? I'm a 4-wing 3, so like, I live in this world quite a lot, and it's hard even not
triumph
to sell my
porn.
Own story.
I kind of think I just found my new band name. I'm starting a band tomorrow, and we're calling ourselves Triumph Porn. And every song's going to have a happy ending.
Every
I love you so much.
On tonic. They're all going to be in major
they're
keys.
All, exactly. None of that minor garbage.
No sad songs here.
Ending on the one, resolves only.
But this is, this is something that we subscribe to. And I'm talking about Westernized culture, specifically in the United States. This is not true for other cultures. But we're obsessed with, how can we spin this in a way that makes it so it means something good, so we don't have to feel things that are bad, or so that we don't have to believe things are bad, or so that we don't teach our children the story that sometimes bad things just happen, because who wants to live in that world? But we do live in that world.
Yeah.
Right. We live in a world where anything can happen.
Yep.
And that could mean you win the lottery and fall in love tomorrow. It also means that a pandemic could begin tomorrow. Someone you really love could die tomorrow. Yeah. And so much of the world is not, so many people in the world are not willing to or ready to sit with the knowledge that that is always true, no matter what we do and no matter what we believe.
Yes.
And I think the purpose of God, religion, the universe, whatever you'd like to call the thing that is grander than us, is to like make sure we're not alone in sitting with that as a truth. We live in a world where anything can happen. It's like, and inclusive of all this, you're not alone in that space.
Yes.
You're being held by something larger than you and accompanied by something larger than you.
Yeah.
Yep.
I promise I won't say more than two sentences about this, but that does remind me, it does make me think, Jesus tried to...
It's like, I know he's going Bible. That's why he said he'll only say two sentences.
Jesus tried to emphasize the importance of the destruction of this sort of duality by saying that the rain falls on the righteous and the wicked alike. Like it's like he did his best to try to bring humans back to this space of the world that Shelby just described. And then the religion that sort of was born out of his name kind of, I don't know, conveniently forgot that part. And because it's an inconvenient truth. It's
or a terrifying.
Yeah. How do you function? Terrifying. How do you actually legitimately function as a human being if you live in a world with where anything can happen? That's to use ableist language, that's paralyzing. That's that's debilitating.
Right.
If you really sit with that truth and ponder that, what does that mean for me? What does that mean for my life? It's a scary prospect. And so much of the work that I do as an intuitive grief guide is to be the presence that sits with people while they're in that space. We don't need to do anything with it yet or always. Sometimes we don't even need to go anywhere. Sometimes the biggest thing we can do is just to look at it and know that it exists.
Yeah.
And like learn to be okay with it. We don't have to be friends with it, but just accept it as a true thing.
I love it. Okay, so your mother passes away. Suddenly, you're young, so young. Your God dies, which is another death, truly another death with all the same grief, I would argue. So you're doubly grieving two deaths. What gets you from that point to being an intuitive grief? What is it, intuitive grief? Is it therapist or guide or...
Yes, I call myself an intuitive grief guide. This is a term that I invented. This exists nowhere else in the world.
Oh, nice.
That I know of anyway.
Yeah.
And it's not because I needed to be special. It's because I it's because I really needed people to know that, A, I'm not a mental health provider, so I can't diagnose or prescribe you medication. That's not the window of genius that I reside in. And also the work that I do is informed from two places and spaces. And so the guide part is that I read anywhere from 30 to 55 grief books a year. And so frameworks, vocabulary, structures, mindfulness, tools, practicality, roots in the ground. That's one half of what I do. But the intuitive piece of it, this is where the spiritual comes in, is sometimes I work with clients and there's just phrases that come to mind or metaphors that arrive or ways to frame things that I've never spoken out loud before. And they end up ringing in a way that is true for them. In a way that other things have not been true for them before. And so it's me offering myself up to grief, up to God, up to the universe, up to the larger thing as like arrive through me because there are words that need to be said. I'm not a medium. I can't talk to your dead people. I don't know how. But it's this combination of the practical guidance. It's like, here's how you live your life after loss. But then the spiritual guidance of here's how you live your life after loss. They're two very different flavors, but they're both required to...
Yes.
Return to life, come back to life, move forward after facing the very worst things that can happen to you.
Yes. Okay, so the intuitive is about you and your intuition. I read that term as you were helping other people intuitively deal with their grief, which maybe it means that too, but you were speaking to the work that you do in that title. I love that.
Yes. That's the work that I do. And then what inadvertently happens is people get reconnected to themselves, their own intuitions, because your intuition is often something that dies when you grieve.
Yep.
You don't know how to make decisions anymore. You don't know right from left because your guidance system, your gods, your truths, your foundations, they all die too.
Yep.
Depending on how much you lost or who you lost or how suddenly we live in a world where anything can happen. Even the belief that somehow you can be saved by like an external force is a belief that dies. And so to not feel like you can trust your gut anymore in the midst of loss is a real thing that so many grieving people face. And so sometimes the work of intuitive grief guidance through one-on-one sessions or through workshops is plugging people back into what does my inner voice sound like now that grief is part of the picture?
Yes.
What does it need from me? What does it want? What's it trying to say that I'm not listening to or that I'm just putting over there and promising I'll deal with later, but not actually ever returning to? And so it's a returning to the self in an intuitive way.
Beautiful.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Michelle, for putting that in quotes.
I love that. Yeah. So you're modeling being in touch with your intuition and following it.
Yes.
And then the client.
And simultaneously, I don't want people to be like me. I don't want to stand here and be like, I am the picture of health.
Right.
And grief.
Yep.
I don't want to be an authority. I want to be a companion. Hence the word guide.
Yes.
Not teacher, not therapist, not professor.
Yeah.
It's not any of these things that imply some sort of power dynamic because grief doesn't know what a power dynamic is.
Yep.
What do you mean by that?
Grief is felt at 100% for everyone. So your biggest loss in terms of who you lost and when you lost them and the circumstances won't be the same as mine, but the intensity at which you feel it, the impact it has on your life, that's universal. I once called grief the great levelator.
Wow.
In that no matter who you are, it rains on the righteous and the wicked alike. Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
It levels everybody to this playing field of no matter who you are and how long you spend on this earth, at some point you will be devastated.
Yep.
And like that's where grief lands us. And so to be able to guide and sit in that space, grief knows no power dynamic. Grief doesn't care if you're a CEO.
Yep.
Grief doesn't care if you live in an impoverished country. Grief doesn't care what race you are or gender you are. Grief doesn't care if you are religious. God knows grief doesn't care if you're religious. That's not going to save you. That's not going to save you. And I'm laughing about it, but also I think so much of the society that we live in right now, again, westernized society, mostly in America, we keep looking for ways to save ourselves through so many external things. And what we really, the doorway to saving ourselves is actually sitting with the pain that we're already in instead of trying to frog in a frying pan, jump our way out of it.
Yep. Yep. I saw another grief worker, a fellow death doula, on Instagram today posting about someone who was saying, basically speaking to those who are closer to the thing that caused the grief. And she's like, I'm 14 years in, and just kind of speaking some life and some hope. And she did it in like the most beautiful way, but then she ended it by saying, and you don't believe me, because I didn't believe the people who said this to me either. And I mean, I thought of that when you were talking about grief knows no power dynamic. I'm like, yeah, people in grief are just like, they're in fuck you land all the time, you know? Like, yeah, right. We're not going to listen to anything. Which makes me wonder what it takes to help someone through grief. And it sounds like you've kind of found, not that there's ever a formula, but that's the whole point, is you're kind of the anti-formula. You're like, there's not really, right? You're like, there's no formula here.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. Oh God, that's wonderful. For as rigid as it is inside my brain, I'm a very organized person. I know where everything is in my house all the time. To be an anti-formula is a bit of a revelation right now.
I love it. That's what I hear in your work. Yes. That's what I hear. And that's what grief means.
Right. Well, and something that I shared with a very dear friend the other day is that nothing outside of a grieving person can make a grieving person feel better. Like you telling me to feel better doesn't make me feel better.
Wait, say that again. By the way, I am by far the rookiest of rookie in this group here on grief. So I have more beginner questions than anything else. So please say that last line again.
Yes, so nothing outside of a grieving person can make them feel better about the pain that they're in. So you telling me to feel better does not make me feel better. You telling me my mom's in a better place, you telling me at least she's not in pain anymore, God never gives you more than you can carry, insert other cliches here, you can always have more kids, you can adopt another dog, there will be other jobs, there are other fish in the sea in terms of dating. no part of that is reassuring. And I think where, I don't quite remember where I was going with this exactly, but I think where I was going with this is that, back to what Kate was talking about, where sometimes grievers don't believe any of the reassurances of hope, these promises of this will look different one day. They have to, and this was true for me, so I'm going to use I statements here, but I had to believe with every fiber of my being that this was the end of my life as I knew it and everything was over, in order to realize that that truth was not true.
Yep.
In order to try on something different. I often refer to, in my first book, I talked about it as trying on different garments in a dressing room. And so sometimes I have to try on and like walk around and wear this idea that grief has broken me. I'm permanently devastated. I can never be the same again. Life is awful and meaningless and purposeless. And there's no reason for me to be here anymore. I have to believe that with everything that exists in my body in order to say, I don't think this fits quite right. I need to take this off. I need to try on another item of clothing that might be a better fit. Yeah. But it's like I have to go all the way in. This might be the four talking. I have to go all the way in order to realize that that's not where I want to live. That's not where I want to set up my new house after loss. Does that make sense?
I understood that with every fiber of my being. I'm like, is she talking about me right now?
You're on wavelength.
I know. And Colby's over here like, what the
fuck? I'm like, hold on, that can't be true.
take us to beginner grief phase one. We can go everywhere. We can go stratosphere. I mean, we can talk about bricks on the ground.
I mean, I'm aware / appreciative of how you said this was true for me, so I'm gonna switch to I statements. So I 100% believe everything you just said about that was your experience. My question now, as you have now guided so many people and sat with so many people, have you found that has that felt pretty universally true? And by that I mean trying on a story like this actually is the end of everything. This is it. I want to ask, does that work for everyone? But that you're the anti-formulist, so you probably won't. You probably will disagree with the question. But
can
I guess that's what
I
came up for me.
For
yeah,
just a minute?
Yeah. How much
do you mind
personality driven or context?
Because part of what Colby and I do is we just play with stuff and see if we actually agree what we say we're thinking. So let me say something and see if I agree with it. But I think what I hear in that question is, because you're hearing us, Shelby and I, talk from these places of having both experienced the loss of our mothers. That's a kind of loss and an intensity of loss that you haven't experienced. Doesn't mean you haven't grieved. You've grieved. But I think the way to kind of help you see that maybe what she just said and what I feel from her isn't actually quite so radical is just think about any story you've been in and how people have tried to pull you out of it. You just needed to live your story and get there on your own. That's really, to me, all we're saying. It just sounds more radical when we're talking about total despair and end of my life. But it's really, I need to live my story and feel what I feel. It's just being able, allowed to feel what we feel and having people not pull. And that story you understand so deeply, right? Yeah. Like not having people pull you out of your feelings and argue with your feelings to get you to move away from them. Does that speak to that a little bit?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, stay tuned, Colby, for my third book, because this is literally what I'm writing about.
Sweet.
Because I found through working with grieving people and even examining myself that there's three big stories that grieving people tell themselves. The first is I'm crazy. The second is I'm alone. And the third is this will be just like this, exactly as it is, now and forever. Forever. Amen. Yeah. And the permanence of it. And so this is a book that's not directed towards grieving people per se, but it's directed to people who are companioning grieving people. So pastors, funeral home directors, nurses, teachers, people who are next to people who are grieving. Grievers can use it on themselves, but I've used these, I offer three counter statements in opposition to that I cannot and will not reveal right now because they're in the works. But in response to these that allow them to be true while also putting some kind of wheels and motion under them so that's not where they live forever, that you can help them see something else is available to them, another truth is available, another story is an option, without saying, that's not true, that's not real, what you're living in doesn't exist. Mm. Because I think what wounds and pains so many grieving people and what they come to me with is my friends and family tell me it's all in my head, or that there's something wrong with me, or that I'm grieving in extreme, I'm too much. And we talked about talking about the idea of too much on the show today. It's just this sense that the way that I'm grieving is wrong.
Yep.
And what we never want to do as people who are companioning people who are grieving is tell them that they are wrong for their pain. Because how can pain be dichotomous like that? And that goes back to the Jesus thing, is pulling us out of this black and white. Sometimes pain isn't wrong. Sometimes pain is appropriate. Sometimes pain is the best response to losing something you really loved, or a future that you thought you would have, or a life that you thought you would live. And for people to try and make you feel something different than pain, gosh, it's like somebody trying to yank all of your teeth out at the same time.
Yes.
It's unpleasant, to say the least.
Everyone is so resonating with every word you are saying. I mean, the comments are just blowing up. So I do want to address a few of them, if that's okay.
Yes.
Hartman23, I just want to say we all see you and we're sending you love. Hartman says, my grief of losing my father within the last 18 months started me questioning my religious beliefs. So resonating with your story there of loss setting you on this journey. So we want to say we see you and we love you. James really loves that you're saying grief is not just associated with death, right? I loved that too when you were listing off all those. That was so beautifully done. And then everyone's just saying, oh my gosh, so true and amazing and exactly. And thank you for all the words that you are sharing with our people. They're feeling it.
This is the magic of doing live.
Yeah.
It is. I know, having our people here to respond and resonate in real time is gorgeous. Okay, so I asked you a question and then we went a bazillion places, which I love, but I still want to know. I want to go backwards a little bit.
And I don't remember it, so great.
I know. I'm glad that I do. Actually, I have a couple places I want to go. There's my favorite quote of yours, before my phone dies, I want to get to that. But I had asked, how did you get from, you know, your mother dies, your God dies, how did you get from there to guide in grief? Was it like immediate you knew you wanted to study grief, or was it something you discovered later on, and how did that happen?
By no stretch of the imagination did I think, even after my mother died, that this was what I was going to do with my life. I majored in communications and advertising in college, and I had every dream of being like this C-suite ad exec, breaking glass ceilings for women in the advertising industry. Because,
nice.
Fun fact, despite 80% of advertising being targeted towards women, 97% of it is written by men. So it's like, what the hell?
I don't know what's fun about that fact, but thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Just absurd.
I wanted to go into that industry and bust some ceilings and shake things up.
Yes.
And it was one of those things that also died when my mother died, is my pursuit of that dream. I didn't have the energy or the drive for it that I used to, because I felt like nothing mattered.
Wow.
And I started reading books on grief right after I moved to Chicago after I died. That was the only thing I knew for sure, is I'm moving to Chicago. And that's another story about intuition when I was 16. It's just where I knew I would land. After college and I got my first library card, I would walk around the shelves of books and not know what I wanted to read. And what kept calling me is the psychology, self-help, sociology, grief section over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading grief books. And I felt so lost in my pain and so isolated, now physically, because I had relocated from North Carolina to Chicago, and emotionally and spiritually isolated, that I just started really tinily, that's not a word, but tinily.
I like
sure it.
Tidbits
it
of now. Like what I was learning on my personal Facebook page. And I had so many people responding, just friends and family, people I knew, saying, you should do something with this. This is not a perspective on grief that I knew. This means something. And I went to a local coffee shop and did a workshop one night. And this woman, who's also intuitive, approached me from across the room and said, you need to use your voice specifically. Like, your vocal cords need to be talking the truths that you are telling people. And so shortly after that, I started, this was in 2016, doing Facebook Lives every Wednesday night.
Love it.
They gradually evolved into my first podcast, which is called Coming Back: Conversations on Life After Loss, where I interviewed people about how they return to life after a big loss. Again, death, divorce, diagnosis. I call them the three Ds, but then all the other losses that happen with that. So loss of home, loss of God, loss of finances, loss of belief systems, loss of custody, loss of bodily autonomy, like all the other things that happen when we have major losses. And that slowly manifested into my first book called Permission to Grieve. And that has slowly evolved into two more podcasts, Grief Book Roundup and Grief Seeds. And then I got an offer last year from Penguin Random House to write a daily devotional, a non-religious daily devotional on grief, because there's a lot of religious ones. But if people have lost God or lost their notion of God in the aftermath of loss, they also need something to guide them in tiny pieces day by day. So that's this. And thank you for throwing that up on the board, too.
You're welcome. And the link is in the description, everybody, if you want a link to the book.
Oh, thank you.
Of course.
Yes, I encourage you. I'll take a slight plug moment, and please support your local independent bookstores, especially if they are Black-owned. Because it means so much to buy grief books from people who are local to you. And then you can start a conversation with why you're buying a book on grief, and you might meet someone who's grieving too. It's been weirdly phenomenal, the connections that I've heard people make just by buying this book at a local bookstore, because people either haven't heard of it or they're curious about the format of it. And then all of a sudden their bookseller is now like their best heart friend with regard to grief. If you can't afford to buy a book, request it at your local library, because libraries love hearing what you want them to carry, and then you can get grief into the hands of people who need support, even if you can't afford to buy a book yourself. So there's my mini plug for that. But as I started doing these Facebook Lives and doing these podcasts, people were like, we want you to lead groups. We want you to work with clients. We want you to essentially evolve into a coaching or a workshop space where you do live courses like this, or one-day workshops, or one-on-one deep dives into grief. And so that's a lot of what my business looks like and is structured to be now. I didn't even think it was going to be a business. It was just a hobby thing I was doing on the side.
Yeah.
But more and more people kept coming to it and say, we want more of this. Nobody else is talking about grief like this, or no one that we can find. Yeah. And so it has evolved into this little online community of people who tell me what they want to talk about with regard to grief. And I create space where that can be true. So just this past month, we're doing grieving family estrangement, because often families get divided or divide themselves after a loss. We're doing forgiveness, because offering forgiveness to other people, especially people who have died, and especially to yourself, is so hard after a loss. And I think one more example that I can give you is just find peace in uncertainty. What does that mean? If we live in a world where anything can happen, how do we find spaces or pockets where we feel like we can actually rest or allow it to be true, or not keep trying to figure it out all the time, and just allow ourselves to exist in our uncertainty in a world that is uncertain? So yeah, spaces where all of that can be true. And then of course I work with people one-on-one as they walk through the door. It's all, again, and it's all very intuitive. It's all very guided by what do you want to see? What's your intuition telling you want to talk about with grief? And then what's my intuition telling me to make next? And it's become this really weirdly beautiful symbiotic balance of grievers informing someone else who is grieving just a few more steps ahead on the road. And again, no power dynamic. Just I've been at it a little bit longer, or differently, or more researched, or however that ends up showing up. It's not, I have authority over you and I'm going to tell you how to grieve. It's you're grieving. I'm also grieving. I can continue to grieve. I'm not done. Yep. Just because my grief is a business, I have not arrived anywhere.
Amen.
My mother's still dead.
Yep.
And I still very much miss her. And so my grief continues to look different too. And she companions me.
Which is why it's true companionship. You're grieving with the people that you're working with. Oh, yay. I love
it. She comes with for the ride every day.
I love it. My favorite quote. I freaked out when I saw this. I might actually cry reading it, because it's so – I wonder what your reaction is when you hear me read this. It's frustrating that we have to be grievers and teachers of our grief. It shouldn't be our job to educate others while we're actively mourning, but it is. Surround yourself with other grieving people every now and then. They'll remind you that there are people out there who know how to respond thoughtfully and empathetically to your loss. That killed me dead.
And this.
I've never heard anyone say that before. I've never heard anyone say it's not fair that you have to be the teacher, which is what I've felt my whole existence is I have to teach other people first what grief even is so that they can kind of come along and understand maybe a little bit, support kind of, sort of,
jeez,
as I grieve. And for someone to say, that's not fair, just felt like, it felt like this weight just fell off my shoulders that someone saw that. It was like, that, she put words to that.
I've seen you exert untold amount of energy trying to show your dearest friends and family that you grieve, that grief is real, that you're not crazy, right? The three things, like, I've never thought about how those two exist in the same space together and how unfair that would feel.
Yeah, while you're actively mourning, also being the teacher, that just blew me. That blew me to pieces. So thank you for writing that, for saying that, for thinking it, getting it out there. It meant a lot to me.
And that's, it's an emotional labor that we're not talking about yet as a society. So as a society, we've started the conversation on the emotional labor of women and people of color and queer people to educate or to take up burdens that those who have more privilege don't. Yeah. And we still haven't had the conversation yet. I'm hoping it's coming because I'm already having it in my spaces with my people. This has come up multiple times through workshops just this year, is what about the labor of those who are mourning actively, trying to teach people who are not in active mourning what it's like to be here? Mm. And the frustrating thing about grief sometimes is that, I don't know if this was your experience after your mom died, Kate, but like physically you look fine. Sometimes you look great. Sometimes you lose a lot of weight because you're not eating and people think that means you're doing really well, which is a whole other conversation. On
right.
Fat, phobia, and grief.
Oh, God.
But like, I cannot tell you the amount of people who told me, I look so strong, I'm so brave, you're doing so well, just because I was standing.
Yep.
And I'm like, you don't comprehend the depths to which I have lost everything. I've lost my mother, I've lost my belief system, I've lost my idea of a nuclear family or a place that I can call home, like a building, because my mother was the homemaker. She wasn't like the servant in the home, but she made our house a home. The idea of what my future was going to look like, the hope of reconciliation about my queerness. There were so many things that died simultaneously that I was like, I'm upright, but I am not fine by any stretch of the imagination. So I had to tell people I wasn't fine and then teach them what to do with that information.
Yep.
And some people take it and some people don't. And when they don't, that's another loss you add into the backpack that you're already carrying.
Mm.
This
there
friend
it goes.
Doesn't get it. This family doesn't get it. I had a professor once, if I can share a small story. My mom died on the 26th of December, so the day after Christmas in 2013. And for the first probably 2 to 3 years after her death, the 26th of every month, I would count like clockwork. It's been this many. It's like when people count, they don't stop at their 18-month-old. They just keep going.
Totally.
But it was like I was counting my mother's death, but it was like I just kept going with the months. And I remember I was in a classroom setting because I had to finish my last semester of college after she died. And unexpectedly, the professor was showing clips of famous political funerals. It was a political science class. And so we watched John F. Kennedy's memorial service and Martin Luther King's memorial service. And these scenes in black and white of caskets and hearses and crying mourners and all these people being dragged through the streets on the 26th of the month. I couldn't take it. And so I ran out of the room crying. I left all my book bags and stuff in there. And I just burst into tears in the hallway. And I came back in after class was dismissed to gather up all my stuff. And instead of offering any sympathy or empathy, this professor literally approached me and said, you can't let a date ruin the rest of your life.
Oh, fuck all.
And
what?
That was literally my response. If I could have given her the finger and not been like penalized for it, I totally would have. But it was one of these circumstances where I was like, you just had the widest doorway to walk through with empathy.
Yes.
And instead you chose to try to tell me to be strong, or that I should be feeling differently about this. She didn't meet me in my pain. She tried to pull me out of it. And so there's that story of, nope, I need to wear this clothing as my truth right now. Eventually I'll change out of it, but now is not the time. And it devastated me on such a core level because I was already grieving. I'm already in so much pain. And even if you just lightly tap me, even if you don't kick me while I'm down, even if you just lightly tap me, that feels so devastating on top of everything else I'm already facing. It's not like I'm having a good day and somebody says something shitty. It's like my entire life has fallen apart. And then somebody says something minorly inconveniencing. And that just takes you so much lower. So it matters that this emotional labor is happening for grieving people in the world.
Yeah. You had to go to class with that professor again? That's awful. I couldn't do it. I would have just flipped.
It's awful. And I'm just sitting here thinking, I am that professor.
Mm. Well, and I'll tell you too.
So it's like when you talk about Shelby, this hope that you have that our culture might start leaning into the importance of non-grievers doing education around that in a similar vein to white identifying folk learning about the experience of people of color and straight identifying folk learning about the, you know, I'm like, good Lord, that you're right. Nobody says that. Nobody who's not grieving or has had a significant loss picks up a book on grief and reads about it.
Yep.
Nobody actively becomes a grief ally. Like, I work with queer allies all the time, but nobody becomes a grief ally. And I'm just sitting here thinking, like, I've been next to you for 20 years since your mom passed, and I just wish I would have. Whatever. It's not about me. I'm conscious of how like that.
It can be
like,
about you in this moment. You can have a moment.
I'm just aware. I can feel myself in those professor's shoes. And I know you're not questioning it, the intention. I know you're not questioning the heart. That's not even the point. When you phrase it as you had this wide open opportunity to sit with and be empathetic, like that framing for me feels really, really useful and like really, really empowering. Like, here is this wide open opportunity to practice empathy. Like, maybe just choose that instead of me sort of entering into this sort of logical, rational, like, here's a thing that can help and it doesn't help.
Well, and I'll tell you something too that comes up because what's happening to you has also happened to me. I didn't understand how much of an asshole I used to be until I became a grieving person. And this happens for so many grieving people. And I worked with a client, I mean, maybe 2 weeks ago. And she said, the loss of my father has prompted me to go back to a high school friend who lost her mother and apologize for the things that I told her when she was grieving, because now I comprehend what it means to lose a parent. And so grief kind of, there's a beautiful framework that Rachel Ricketts talks about in her book, Do Better, and it's a spirituality book for anti-racism. And she talks about how we are all oppressed oppressors. So we are all oppressed in some ways, but we also oppress in some ways. And it depends on privilege. It depends on so many other things. But it's like we're all people who oppress grieving people until we become grieving people ourselves. And then we become oppressed as grievers. If I can use the framework in that way, and I know I'm kind of appropriating something that doesn't belong to me in the grief space. But that kind of emotional labor is really real. And the more marginalized you are, the less privileged you are, the more you have that wired in, born in. If you are born into poverty, if you are born non-white, if you are born spaces that are straight and you are a queer person, you carry grief with you for so much longer than the rest of the world does. And so much of the education that you offer to other people is not just this is who I am and my labels and my titles and the pains that I've been through, but it's like, look how long I've been doing this alone, invisibly, under the radar, taking the slights, taking the jabs, taking the... I'm in writing this third book, I've discovered a concept called microtrauma. And it's these little tiny things that people say to us that if it was just the only thing we heard in a day, it wouldn't matter. But over time, they build up and actually change how we see the world. So if we keep being met with people like I used to be, everything happens for a reason. And then my mom died, who's like, everything does not happen for a reason. But if we keep hearing that over and over again, or God never gives you anything you can't handle, or they're in a better place, or God needed another angel. If we keep hearing stories like that over and over and we never get to walk through that doorway of empathy somebody offers us, it literally shifts our worldview into a place where we feel like I am wrong because I cannot fit into this belief system with them. So people become more isolated, more alone, more desolate, more despairing. And so when I talk about this doorway being wide open, I was like, the tiniest things you say can literally change how people are able to walk through that door of empathy. My pain is allowed. Your grief is welcome here. I'm so sorry the 26th is such a hard day for you. I don't know if there's anything I can do, but I'd like to help if I can. Like, these teeny tiny doorways that we walk through, even that is like, maybe the world isn't all bad. It helps me take off that clothing or shift that story that much faster.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Perfect sense. Perfect sense. Okay. Kelsey said, I've experienced both the deep loss and grief and then been on the side of oppressing grief. Do you think that that comes from a place of discomfort? She wants to know. What are your thoughts on that? Like that thing we do.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Like well, I think,
and this is a larger problem. I think one of the issues we have, especially in America, is believing that the individual is the source of all of our problems. And if we can just fix ourselves, our lives will be fine. But this is like a societal narrative that we need to untangle and undo. And I think especially with COVID, it's happening, small ways, but it's happening, where grief is entering into conversations a lot more than it used to. We live in a world where anything can happen. Pain is normal. Anxiety about uncertainty is normal. And so these conversations, even if they're not talking about grief explicitly, they're talking about loss. They're talking about we can't go back to the way things used to be. That is a loss in and of itself. The death of future hopes, dreams, expectations. And even the sense that you're talking about the parent orientation of being forced to wear masks, even that sense of like the minor inconvenience adding on to the grief you're already carrying. It's like, this isn't just we have to wear masks at a meeting, we can't hear anybody. It's we have to wear masks at a meeting and we're reminded of everybody who's died from this virus. We're reminded of everybody who refuses to step up and get a vaccine for this. We're reminded of all the ways that this year and a half has not been everything we hoped it would be. We're reminded of all the ways this is going to traumatize our kids that we don't even know about. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's not just I have to wear a mask at a meeting. It's something larger and grander than that. Yeah. And I think the society that we're living in right now, that's slowly shifting. And we can all be a part of this. So this is an invitation that we're extending to you through the show today and beyond, is shifting from this place of it's not okay to talk about grief, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, like these things that are only sunny or only happy, that positive spiritual bypassing, good vibes only, and entering into this place where it's like, no, but how are you really feeling? What matters to you right now? What's underneath this? It's the be kind for everyone you know is fighting a hard battle, but actually getting curious about what they're battling, as opposed to just be nice to everybody because it's a good thing to do. Uh-huh. It's be nice and then open the door for grief to also exist alongside the kindness, alongside the niceness. And so for somebody to have stepped up and said, I don't know if this happened at your school, but to say, I know it's really hard that we're all having to wear masks and all this. Not only can you not hear, but it's a reminder of how uncertain the school year is going to be. What would that have done to the temperature in the room? The anxiety in the room.
Well, that's actually the real reason why we called it a nightmare, because the leadership, not because we had to wear masks, but yes, you're right. Yeah, it would have. I mean, that's literally what I said is, what if the principal had said, hey, I know this is, because we weren't actually complaining about having to wear masks. We were complaining about the air conditioning being fixed and three classrooms being shoved into the same space with different speakers talking to different groups. So we weren't complaining about wearing masks. But the point is...
Thank you
your analogy still works, because we still were saying, if someone had just stood up and said, I know this is so hard and this is just like madness and I'm so sorry and we're going to get through it together, would have been a totally different experience than what it was. Yeah.
And I think, I don't remember their name, but the person who left that comment, I think we're uncomfortable because we're taught to be uncomfortable.
Kelsey,
we're taught that grief is uncomfortable.
Yes.
We're taught that it's not a safe place to be because it's not a predictable place to be.
Yes.
My first book, I'll hold it up because I don't know if y'all have the screen image of this.
No, I don't.
To grieve.
Yep, it's good.
Caution, there are swear words in the first two chapters, so if you can't handle that, don't read this book.
No one on our show.
In the second...
they wouldn't be watching or listening if they couldn't handle it.
I get one Amazon review one time from a woman in her 60s who was like, this is outrageous, I can't believe there's swear words, and now I have to give a disclaimer for everything.
Oh my gosh.
So, that's my own issues, that's my own thing.
No, we get it.
But the middle section, so I offer people three different kinds of permission in life after loss, and I say I offer, but I learned, and then I wrote about it. Permission to feel, which is a really good place to start. Permission to have the emotions you're having, to feel the things you're experiencing and just allowing them to be true. Permission to be, which is about changing identity. What if grief makes me a different person? And it will. Yeah. And then permission to do, which is, how do I take my grief out into the world and make it an action? How do I do grief? What does that make me, how does that influence me? Do I hang pictures on the wall? Do I do a memorial bench? Do I set up a nonprofit? Do I wear a different piece of jewelry every day? How am I physically showing my grief out in the world? But in permission to be, and I probably can't find the page number for you exactly right now, but there's this part about how we live in a society that really values and treasures predictability and certainty. And so grief is an unpredictable and uncertain experience. And therefore, we are taught that grief is an uncomfortable experience because we don't know what to do with it. There is no magic formula. I think, as Colby was so trying to lovingly tease out of me earlier, there's really nothing that works for everyone. Because people grieve so differently, but because also there's no fix for grief. It's just it is a thing that happens.
It just is.
Right. It just is. Grief is a thing that happens to all of us. And so to simply acknowledge it or to be present with it or to be witness to it, is the most powerful thing you can do with it. And that's also a thing I'm really excited about with this. I don't know what to call it, the next coming, the shift in consciousness, whatever's happening. There's a lot of different phrases that people are using for it. But we are arriving slowly to a place where we acknowledge and value the sheer importance of presence over everything.
Yep.
Over just witnessing, over just being present. It's like, we don't have to do anything yet. There may not be anything to do, but just to sit with people, to companion them, to check in on them, to send texts, to pop over Facebook Messenger, to send Instagram DMs, to send a meme and say, hey, this made me think of you and the loss of your mom, or, hey, it's the 13th and I'm realizing it's been a year since your son died. Here's a picture I have of him you may not have seen yet. But this kind of companioning and this kind of witnessing as currency, as opposed to money as currency, as opposed to triumph foreign as currency, I feel like we're slowly shifting the narrative of like what actually has value and what matters to our hearts as people, and what actually feels like healing, what actually feels like progress in grief is being witnessed and being told it's okay and being allowed. We get to expand in that. We're not forced to contract.
Yes.
We get to have all of it. We're not forced to display some of it. We're allowed.
Well, that's a hopeful place to wrap that up.
I love it.
That expanding collective consciousness to continue as well. Shelby, you're a gift.
You're a delight of a woman. Thank you for being here with us.
You are an absolute gift. Your work is so holy.
Everybody,
so
go follow Shelby. Her handle has been sitting there in the corner. Look at me try to point to it. I'm pointing to ours.
I can only point down, so I think that's about all I can go.
It's perfect. That's the easy one to do.
Yes.
Anyway, go follow Shelby and buy her books. And
Susan says, well, this woman in her 60s welcomes all the swear words.
Yes, Susan. That's my kind of gal.
Oh my God.
Oh gosh. It's that negativity bias thing. You remember the one awful thing people
especially
say,
for
and all
image,
the nice reviews,
Kaya.
All the lovely.
Yes.
You know what's helpful?
Things that go right out the
not
window.
To be the triumph porn guy, but you know what's really helpful?
I mean, you can't help it, baby.
We get those on our church. And actually, the one-star reviews for our church are some of the most helpful reviews. Like,
so true.
They tell people more about what they need to know about our church with their one-star review.
Like, don't go there. The pastor preaches that everybody's fully human.
Stuff like that. It's like, thank you. That's exactly the sort of, we want that out there. So anyway.
Great.
Yes. It's like, don't read this book. There's swear words. And some people are like, finally, a Greek book with swear words.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly that.
Absolutely.
Exactly that. Everybody's thanking you so much and so grateful. Can we do lightning round with you? Are you open to that?
Oh my gosh. I love lightning round.
Yay.
I don't know how fast I'll be, but
Finally. Shelby, you're just my favorite human. Everyone, when we say it's lightning round, they're like,
they get all panicky.
I'm like, fun. It's fun, okay? It's supposed to be fun. And I'm always like, you're going to have fun whether you like it or not. Which is terrible. But,
okay. You like icebreakers, don't you?
Yes, I do. What's your favorite movie of all time?
It's called Last Holiday with Queen Latifah. And it was a remake of a movie, I believe, that came out in the 50s or 60s. But essentially, without spoiling it, a woman learns that she only has 3 weeks to live, and she totally revamps her entire life. And that's all I'll share. But the soundtrack's amazing, and Queen Latifah is one of my favorite queer icons.
Because she's everything, yes.
That's awesome.
Okay. Self-care is fill in the blank.
Ongoing.
Ongoing.
I have an ideal where self-care is an end of some kind. I've arrived.
Self has been cared for.
Self-care. It's just ongoing.
Self is good.
Sometimes it's a chore and sometimes it's a glorious relationship, and both are true.
I love it. I love that answer so much. Okay, what's something you're deeply grateful for right now?
This is another story for another podcast, but I almost died this year, and I just celebrated my 29th birthday on Thursday, and so to exist now and to keep revolving around the sun is wildly cool to me.
That's amazing.
It's wildly cool.
I love it.
We're just going to
grateful
just
for
gonna
being
leave
alive.
That dangling out
yeah, we're
there,
just huh? going to we're just going to believe that.
Okay, I'm looking
I mean, it's lightning round.
Shelby 2.0. Looking forward to that.
What's your weirdest fear? Everybody's got one.
Crabs.
Yep, that's weird.
not the STD, not the STI. It's the ones that walk sideways on the beach. I hate them. They scare the crap out of me. Spiders are fine for some reason. I can handle spiders. I see them as good omens. I love them. But like sideways crabs on the beach, I can't. I cannot handle crabs. I just can't
sideways
do
crabs.
Oh, wait, can we title the episode "Sideways Crabs on the Beach"?
Parentheses, not the STDs.
Not the STDs.
Those crabs on the beach are fine.
Okay, this is one of my favorite lightning round questions of all time. Who's a famous person that you swear you'd be besties with if only you knew each other?
This is my favorite. Okay, so my favorite show of all time is The Golden Girls, and I am fully convinced with every fiber of my being that Bea Arthur and I would just be best friends. I love her more than life itself, and I still go to that library where I checked out all the books on grief 5 years ago, and I recently checked out her one-woman show on Broadway, and if you've never listened to that album, which I guarantee most of you haven't, it is a fantastic piece of music. That's all I'll say.
Oh,
Bea Arthur, listen to her one-woman show.
Word.
It's phenomenal.
You're coming out of left field with this.
She's
this is
just
fantastic.
The best. This is awesome. Okay, what's a book you think everyone should read? Doesn't mean it has to be serious.
I just gifted this one to my partner, Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yes.
Because the way that she frames creativity, you can also frame grief that way. As a long-term partner, as a trickster, as something that wants to work with you and you can work with it. And so that has informed a lot of how I work with grief with my clients. It's like,
that's
what
really
if this
cool.
thing was alive and wanted to work with you as
I
opposed to
that.
Being the thing that is devouring you or depriving you of life?
I love it.
That's cool.
That's a great framework. Okay, this is our last question that we ask everyone every week on the show. What is sustaining your soul right now? What's keeping you going?
Other humans. Yeah. Friends, my partner, my sister. Humans.
I love it.
When humans get it right, it's really good.
It's
really good.
I love humans.
One client I had described her inner universe as like a tuning fork. And when something was supremely true, she's like, I can feel it like almost ringing or buzzing in there. And like when humans get it right, same idea. It's just like something sings, something happens.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Love that.
Michelle also, I put comments up.
Oh, that's weird.
That's
when I change scenes.
Yeah, that's okay. Michelle says, Shelby, I can't wait to read your books. Thank you. And then Susan said, me too. Just bought them on Kindle. So, yay.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. I so appreciate all of that.
Yeah. And everyone is saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Wonderful.
Thank you for taking
and
the time.
Thank shout
you
out to Linda from Germany
Linda
for landing
from
me
Germany.
Linda from Germany. Buy that woman a coffee.
She probably meant some other Kate and Colby, but it landed you here. So
false. Absolutely false.
No, she sent links and everything. She was like, this is the one. She sent me your inbox. I was like, all right, I'm reaching out today.
Oh, I love it. Well, this has been one of my favorite conversations. Well, probably just my favorite conversation, period, ever. So thank you. Thank you
thank
so
you.
Much for being here. You're a beautiful person. Keep
thank
being you.
You.
Good night, Shelby. Until next time, because we got to hear
good
about
night.
That story
thanks,
about how
everyone.
You almost died. We're going to get
yep,
to that someday.
We can
someday.
Get into that next
all
time,
right.
absolutely.
Good night.
Cliffhanger!
Shelby frickin' Forsythia.
You never know what's going to happen when you're like, let's have a stranger come on the show. She's not a stranger. She's a soul sister.
She is, yeah. She's your sister from a different mister. That was a gift.
That was beautiful.
Well, you can take this video right now, friends, and as soon as the broadcast ends, grab the link for this video, share it with your people, tell them that they need to meet Shelby, and then when the podcast finally gets released, which I'm a few weeks behind, share the podcast too, okay?
Yeah, everyone needs
really good. Okay. Next week on the Kate and Colby Show, we get to catch up with our dear friend.
Can't wait.
Oh, I miss that guy.
We love this man. Something fierce.
Checked in with him.
Don't miss time.
Psychologist / theologian of the best kind.
And I just promise you that any time you spend with Richard Beck feels like you just spent time with a family member who wanted to lift you up.
Yeah.
It's just the best feeling.
Yeah, it's like your soul gets a hug.
Yeah. Come hang out. And then
we get to meet another new person, Michael W. Waters, who's authored a couple incredible children's books and then I almost said adult books, but that has a slightly different sound to it.
Regular books.
So, yeah, standard. So that'll be super fun. And then another person who's written a lot about grief and one of your faves as well.
Yeah.
The one, the only, John Pavlovitz.
Yeah.
Whom we obviously know of, but haven't had a chance to meet either. So that'll be fun. That is all coming up here on this free podcast, The Kate and Colby Show, Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Well, it is kind of for them. Love you all. Good night. If you enjoy The Kate and Colby Show, here are a few ways you can support us. Subscribe to our podcast feed on whatever platform you use, and when you do, go ahead and leave us a review or rating. This will help others to discover our show. You can find and follow us on social media using the handle @KateandColby. And speaking of social media, we'd love it if you shared our show with your friends. It seems everyone is looking for great podcast recommendations, so why don't you help them and us out? Finally, if you visit us at kateandcolby.com, you can subscribe to our newsletter, learn more about us, the hosts, and discover other great resources for coming more alive. Thank you for your love and your support. We do this show for you, our pod fam. Until next time, be well.